Welcome to Workforce Inside, the podcast for business leaders looking for fresh insights and solutions to today's most pressing workforce challenges. I'm your host, Bhushan Sethi, Joint Global People and Organization Leader at PwC. In each episode, you'll receive new ideas from experienced practitioners who are helping employers drive workforce transformation. The current labor market paradox is that while unemployment remains uncomfortably high, employers continue to report widespread labor shortages. The record high job openings and quit rates continue to suggest a labor market that is tighter than the US has had in decades. In this episode, we'll discuss the impacts and how business leaders may have to adjust their workforce strategies. Joining me today is Chris Benko, PwC's chief economist and leader of PwC Intelligence, and Craig Stromberg, a leader of business acumen for PwC Intelligence. Welcome, Chris and Craig.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
Really excited to get into this discussion around labor market dynamics and how they impact workforce strategies. But first comes first, the most important question of the podcast is, have you ever won a contest? Start with you, Chris.
It was a contest and an award, and it was 1979, and I was in eighth grade, and I won the Harrisburg Patriot News Paper Delivery Person of the Year Award.
Nice. And Craig?
So there are a couple of very embarrassing junior and high school story contests that I could tell, but probably the more useful one is I was actually caller number 7 once on the radio to get free tickets. But the problem was I was 16 and you were supposed to be 18. So I had to put them on hold and run around the neighborhood trying to find an adult to come on the phone and accept the tickets, which eventually I did. I got to see Steve Winwood, who owes me for going to his concert, if he's listening.
Nice. Very cool. So we're with two winners today. Now, what's really exciting today is we've got two individuals who specialize in really understanding labor dynamics. So Chris, I'd like to start with you. When you think about studying the labor market, what would be the primer that you would explain to some of the business leaders today on what it is and why it's important, how it factors into some of the workforce strategies, either we're driving for PwC or when you're brought in to talk to our clients?
The first thing I'd say, Bhushan, many of us study the labor market. I don't feel like any of us feel like we are experts in the labor market, maybe anymore, because there are a lot of things happening in the labor market specifically, but in the broader economy in general, that just seem paradoxical right now. They just seem distorted or in conflict with one another, certainly taking place in the labor market, right? And as you said in the introduction, we've got a situation where what we have is an unemployment rate, although it's come down, is still significantly higher than what it was before the pandemic. But we also are seeing shortages across the entire economy in terms of labor, and there's demand for jobs. It's the supply side for labor that's an issue. Now, labor is important because it is central to any economy. It is what drives consumer-oriented economies. In the U.S., if nothing else, is a consumer-oriented economy. Consumer spending is 70% of the economy. It drives 80 or 100% of growth. So it is part of that cycle of how economies work. But it's very confusing right now in macro as well as labor.
So the only thing that I would add is that I think that we have to recognize that COVID-19 was more than an inconvenience. It was a historical meteor strike that we have never lived through since our forebears in the Great Depression and the World War II. A global event whose impacts are so massive that at this point in time, they are impossible to see. And I think it is worth remembering that before COVID, we were having a different conversation about labor. And that conversation was about how the onset of the fourth industrial revolution and all the automation that it might bring was going to threaten a lot of labor categories up and down the chain and across sectors. That conversation is still to be dealt with. When we deal with all of these COVID uncertainties that Chris talked about, we still have to deal with that because the 4IR wave still hasn't hit us. It too got interrupted by COVID. So I think it's important as we think about this and as listeners think about this, it's not just COVID particularities in terms of labor we're dealing with. It's all of that pre-COVID uncertainty that many of us may have forgotten about.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And in our Next in Work survey that we released in late August, when we asked business leaders, Craig, to that point, they said the biggest focus for the next 12 to 18 months is how they redesign work increase the level of automation to reduce the reliance on key persons. And they've got to do that in an inclusive way. But I think that confluence of automation and labor market shortages, for whatever reason, safety, stimulus, demand, is a real issue. We know that there's unemployment rate. We know that we can look at job gains, job losses by industry, which is very interesting for recruiters in the audience, for people who are owning workforce planning in a company. We see quit rates, and that's got a lot of interest in terms of the great resignation. Any other insights or suggestions you would have when you look at these reports, when you look at them for our own firm, what should the audience be really looking at, whether it's monthly or periodically?
I think in general, Sean, the U.S. is a very complex economy. There's many, many economies within the economy. I think there is a danger in good times relying on aggregates and averages to tell a story of everything that's going on. It used to be that you might be misinformed, you might make a minor mistake. Where we are right now, there's so many things going on that seem to be in conflict, and we're still in transition. We're not in an equilibrium state. It's really dangerous to listen to just the headlines and not have real data literacy. So think about something as simple as the unemployment rate and how that can be misinterpreted. The unemployment rate, there's both a numerator and a denominator, and they can both move. And what might look like a positive direction in the unemployment rate could actually be for the wrong reasons if you don't understand the pieces that are going into that, right? And that can lead to, in this environment, while people strategies were always important, people strategies are business strategy because it is so central to what is happening. Misunderstanding something like the unemployment rate and how it's calculated and why it's changing, not just what the change was, you can lead to really serious strategic missteps.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think you're probably talking about labor rate participation and some of what we've seen in COVID around different demographics. You want to talk a bit more about that, Craig?
The only thing I'd add there is that I think as many of us try and consume the data that is in the news, which when it comes to economics and labor can be overwhelming in the current environment, it's important to keep in mind the difference between an indicator and what is truth. And even something like the jobs report, which has a lot of data behind it and a lot of data analysis, a lot of data engineering, it's an indicator of which way things are headed. It's not the absolute truth of where things are. It could be off. It could be misleading. It could be a correction. It could be something that is editing what has happened a quarter before. So people have to have a bit of skepticism in terms of their mindset when they look at some of the data and try and be objective as not feeling that anything is ever final when it comes to economic data. There's always a comma. That comes. It's not a period. It's always a comma.
So, shall we go down a little bit and then bring it back up to Craig's point? You mentioned the labor force participation rate. That's the denominator of the unemployment rate. We're still millions of people short in the labor force of where we were pre-pandemic. So where are they and what's happening? What's going on, right? There are a lot of things that could contribute to this. We honestly don't know what the mix is and what the primary drivers are and how it's going to play out. And I'll talk about that in a second, but we had a public health crisis, right? I mean, that affected the population. You can't have a healthy economic outlook until you have a healthy population. And that was an issue. We have people, you mentioned the great resignation. I mean, some of that resignation was just early retirement. And when we look at the pressure that is putting on the economy, that's a bit of a foreshadowing of what happens when you get a declining working age population. We've been talking about what's going to happen when baby boomers continue the acceleration of retirement there. This is a little bit of taste of that. Declining working age populations put a lot of stress on economies. We know that there are some people who continue to be worried about going back into the workplace because of the health. We have some that want to go back, but aren't able to because of childcare issues. And we also know that there are people that have leverage and optionality in the workforce that they didn't have before, where you think of the labor market, it's a market. There's price and quantity adjusts to find an equilibrium. We're not at that equilibrium yet, but many people in the workforce are finding that what a business is willing to buy their labor at and what they're willing to sell their labor for have not met yet. And that's putting a lot of upward pressure on wages and employment costs. And that's a really big piece of the planning process for businesses right now. I think to Craig's other point, though, in terms of periods and commas, let's understand that economics is not a science like chemistry or physics, right? The rules change over time because they are rules that are a function of millions and millions and billions of individual decisions that are aggregated. And those relationships change as decisions change. So imagine if the law of gravity didn't work next Tuesday. that would change how you think about the world. Imagine if water didn't boil at 212 or freeze at 32 anymore. That's the kind of science we're talking about with economics. And we're in the midst of this great recalibration where those relationships are suddenly jolted into changing. So the cards have been thrown up into the air, but they haven't landed yet. And in terms of being an expert in labor market, we know what we think could happen. We can put out a lot of theories, but we don't really know because it's going to come down to individuals in mass and what they're doing. And that affects decision-making that businesses need to make today.
Yeah, really good point. And to kind of bring both of these together, I think what you're also highlighting is the importance of policy. Policies around childcare that could improve labor rate participation, policies around immigration, which could help, you know, on the supply side, or retirement support that could actually bring people back as we kind of aging demographics. Craig, as we think about different industries, I know you spent time looking at supply chain and labor. How do you look at this across different industries in terms of some of the labor dynamics?
So part of what we have to do is we have to look at where things were as we entered COVID. And they're at a radically different point in many places than we are now. So where we are right now in time, right, as we talk about this and when we listen to this podcast, we're at a point in time where some of the workers who were most at risk before COVID, especially in the service industry, are getting for the first time in the history of those positions sign-on bonuses. They need labor so badly that they can demand wage pressure that they've never had before. So what's happening across a lot of the sectors is not normal and probably not going to last a long time. I think part of what we have to keep in mind when we look at different types of labor across different sectors is there was a very powerful and potentially very disruptive divergence that emerged during COVID, where workers who could work remotely and did tended to flourish, gain wealth, keep their jobs, and are now in a position to benefit from the war on talent even more than anybody else. Other types of labor across sectors did not fare as well. Anybody that required a physical presence to do your job, whether it was in a warehouse or on the street or at an airport, you're re-entering the workforce, perhaps where you were, but those who are above you in terms of income and stability, their graph went way up in terms of income. And yours has only started to steadily come back. That inequity is going to be, to your point about policy, a big policy problem that's going to have to be dealt with. Some of it is already being explored, at least in the US, without resolution. But that's one of the things that companies across sectors are going to have to be aware of is if they have employees that were not all able to really be stable and work remotely, and if they have different categories of employees, they are going to need human capital policies that are much more flexible, much more elastic than you might have had in a one-size-fit-all before COVID.
Craig, great point. Here's a really interesting thing about what we went through. The pandemic and then the recession that came with it and now the recovery that we're in, it really did two big things. It stressed the system. There were places where there were some wins, where the systems held. There have been some epic fails. Supply chain issues right now is a great example of that. The other thing it did is it didn't necessarily create new trends, but it certainly accelerated trends that were already in existence. One of those, and Craig, this is what you're talking about, was about bifurcation, where you got increasing bifurcation coming out of this that we had going in, and it was already an issue. We were already talking about income inequality, wealth inequality, very different labor markets at the higher end and the lower end, and what demographics were supplying each of those. There is no single labor market. You mentioned the female participation rate. We have given up all of the gains we have made in the participation rate since the 1980s so far. Will we get them back? Part of that is a function of what will the policy be, and we don't know. So when you're planning, there's never been a more important time to think about the scenarios and what the possible outcomes are, because single point planning was never a good idea. It is absolutely critical now if you really want to chart your course forward.
Thanks, Chris. I'm glad you brought up scenario planning. And we talked about that in one of our previous podcasts on workforce strategy and how bringing CFO, the heads of HR, the heads of business, the heads of real estate and technology together to really think about that planning process. And what you're both describing is there's economic indicators, once you're going to get under the headlines, that are really important. As we look forward, maybe Chris, to kind of throw this to you, one of the big pieces that we worry about is inflation and other economic indicators and GDP going down. How does that factor into all of this in terms of labor dynamics?
So what you'll find in macros, everything is interrelated somewhere. It's a question of how strong are the relationships? Are they really causal relationships? But then those relationships change over time. Inflation is something that we were struggling as an economy to generate for a decade leading up to the pandemic. Now the question is, we have inflation. Is it becoming embedded in the economy or is it transitory? Is it broad-based or is it selected just a few things and will it pass over time? Certainly, there are different kinds of inflation. Think of it as demand pull and cost push. Cost push is what we're looking at right now from how do we plan around that. Certainly, demand has been very strong. We can't forget about it, but it's cost push because that's increased cost of what you're selling. So the supply chain has done a number on that and wages and increased employee compensation. And that gets into how do we retain and attract talent in this world. The thing that has changed, though, think of the big three stakeholders in any economy. You have consumers, you have businesses and investors who are looking for returns, and you have labor. In the US, the consumers have won the gold medal for decades, right? There's more options, they get it faster, lower prices. We didn't have inflation. Businesses were still able to generate great returns, even in that environment of low pricing power, which is another word for inflation, because they drove supply chain costs out and they managed labor costs very carefully. There was not a lot of wage pressure. And that leaves labor in last place. That influence has now changed. Labor now has leverage and options that it never had before. And you're seeing that playing out in some of the cost-driven inflation numbers in the market.
Thanks, Chris. Really important points. So Craig, as we continue to look forward, and you mentioned that automation has a big impact on the labor force, and we've seen some of that in COVID, and some of that might be pent up investments that firms need to make. As you look at labor dynamics across sectors or communities, what would you advise our listeners?
So automation story during COVID, I do not think has been properly told. What is very likely happened, we can't say that it has happened for sure, but it has very likely happened, is that many companies in many sectors had a forced experiment where they had to deal with how do they provide their services and produce their products with a very disrupted workforce, a situation that they never expected to find themselves in, and one that was very expensive. And what some of them probably learned is that I can probably do what I need to do to grow revenue and support customers with less people. How they're going to do that, many may not be sure on, but it's unique. And that's not a word I like to use very much, but it is unique in the experience that we have just gone through, where every company in every sector has just had to think about workforce issues at scale all at once. And many of them are probably thinking about, how do I use the cresting wave of automation, which was growing as a discussion and as technologies that would enable it before COVID, apply that to all the lessons I learned about what I could do with less potentially during the crisis. And what we're going to see in the post-COVID world may be an acceleration of automation that we might not have ever seen at that scale, at that speed, if COVID had never happened. So Chris talked before about COVID accelerating certain things. Automation is undoubtedly one of those things that probably get accelerated as a result of what companies had learned and had to go through during the crisis.
So Bashar, think of it. Here's another paradox. You've got this situation right now where businesses, big and small, are fighting to attract and retain the right talent because they're struggling with this. At the same time, these same businesses are thinking about the role of automation that Craig just talked about, because they also realize that on paper, the fewer people they have and the more they can automate, the less risk they have when sudden things happen like we just went through. So, you know, you're both trying to do whatever you can to bring the best people into your organization, but not be so dependent on them that your risk exposure goes up. It's a very fine line.
And the one thing that I might add here very quickly is, if listeners are feeling a bit unsettled by all of this, you know, welcome to the club. This is disequilibrium. This is the state in which we find ourselves, where, to Chris's point, not just the laws of economics, but the laws of so many things that we thought we understood, many of our most core assumptions about the economy and labor and workforce, they have all been thrown out the window. And disequilibrium is probably going to stay here for a while. The good news is that we're all sort of in disequilibrium together, but it is a highly uncertain state. So nobody who feels that should feel like they're alone.
Yeah, and I think what you're both highlighting is the important role that businesses now play in society in a massive way. You've mentioned responsible automation, Craig. We know that automation can impact many diverse populations. We know that in the labor stats, Black unemployment is significantly higher. The same thing for Latinx. We know youth unemployment is not where we want it to be. We know long-term unemployment is a big challenge. So as businesses think about job creation, automation, whether it's in their community or sector, I think what you're both making the point is that we need to look at this data. Some of this data is an outcome, but some of it absolutely is an input to say, how do we do better in a human contact industry? If we're going to bring automation in, how do we upskill people and transition them for other roles in the community? So as we look to close this out, I think you both commented on the real importance of bringing external data and insights, getting different constituents in an organization together to think about the workforce strategy from finance to heads of businesses to heads of human resources. Chris, if I start with you, what are your big takeaways and actions that you'd want the listeners to consider?
Certainly, it goes back to what we talked about, scenario planning, right? I think we all need to understand that the range of possible outcomes in the economy is maybe not as wide as it was a year ago, but it's still uncomfortably wide, not what we're used to dealing with when we could predictably count on 2% economic growth and we just plan within that. There are wild cards there that we are not used to dealing with. So we need to understand, look at an outside-in perspective, look at how a business is positioned in the broader economy and what trends are going to be affecting it. And are there headwinds? Are there tailwinds? And where are you from a competitive position before you even think about overlaying what the strategic choices you're making are? But the other thing I'd say, Bishan, I'd end where I began, is around understanding the data that you're using to make the decisions. Understand what it is. Understand what it isn't. Understand why it moves. Because we've got so much complexity and so many paradoxical relationships right now. It's very easy to think you're making an informed decision with data where you're actually making the wrong decision because of the data.
Thank you. So really understanding the scenarios that drive the strategy and really being a student of the data. Craig, what would you add to that?
So I think there's a couple of key takeaways here, and we've talked about some of these already. One of them is we are at a point in time in history where there are four forces that are converging to change the way that society and our culture and businesses work. There's a high degree of inequity in everything from income to skills to level of access to technology. There is enormous social and cultural change that is occurring, especially in the United States, at a rapid rate, pushed along by events that happened just before and during COVID. There's COVID itself and everything that it will unleash. And there's a high degree of distrust of institutions, of data, of science. The one area, and this is sort of the second thing, where distrust is not as much of a factor, is with corporations. Corporations have emerged from COVID with more trust from their employees than they ever had before. It comes with an obligation, however, that those employees want corporations to do more in terms of making a stand and a statement and having a certain cultures and value set that they will align with. And when we talk about labor, Chris and I, like everybody else in the firm, have been hiring a lot of people recently from outside the firm. One of the things that we have found is part of the reason they come to the firm is the firm's value set. It attracts them. And I'm sure that's true of other companies as well. But companies that aren't ready to have that conversation in this environment being shaped by those forces may not be as successful in getting the talent they want. And the last thing I'd add is that part of what COVID-19 should have taught companies is that they are not immune from global events of great consequence. And no matter your size and no matter your sector, you need, not outsourced, you need a system to monitor, measure, and manage risk, especially unforeseen, unexpected risk. And if you don't have a system to do that, you need to get one. And you need to not lose the lessons that you learned the hard way from COVID, because for better or worse, this is probably not the last time that we're going to have to go through something like this. So let's not forget everything we just learned, especially about workforce and labor. So the next time we have something behind glass and we can break it and start to use it earlier in the crisis instead of later.
What I heard from that is scenario-based, data-driven, and trust at the core. I think it's a really good way to kind of wrap this up. We started this discussion by going deep into data, but we kind of finish it with really kind of reinforcing businesses' role in society delivered to all its stakeholders and the role that data plays in that. Chris and Craig, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. This was a little different episode than what we normally have. I think our listeners have got great insight on how to use the data so that they can think about their workforce strategies. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into this episode of Workforce Inside. And please visit our website for more insights on how to tackle your organization's workforce challenges. And please do check out some of the prior episodes in this series and subscribe to our podcast.
Thanks, Rashan. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.